Ryan Stanton here with ASAP Frontline. I'm struggling to get the words out right today. So joined today with Dr. Rob Rodriguez. And we're going to do some stuff today on a topic that we have discussed on a broader scale with Dr. Howie Mel and some others. Actually, Casey did as well on some of the vaccine hesitancy, but actually focusing in a little bit more today on some of the special populations that may have some hesitancy on where and where that comes from. Dr. Rodriguez is joining us, and I'll introduce him and let him kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, Dr. Rodriguez. Thank you for joining us here on the front line.
It's great to be here, Ryan. I am an emergency physician, professor of emergency medicine with UCSF. I practice emergency medicine and critical care at safety net hospitals. Most of my time is spent at San Francisco General. And I've been there for coming up on 17 years now. Time kind of gets away from you there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I did the same thing. I just calculating that my hospital that I feel like I'm the new guy is I'm now just turned 8 years old there. So yeah, the time does fly. Go for it.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm glad we're talking about this topic. It's a huge issue. And even though it appears that the pandemic is waning, this remains a critical, critical topic. And I'm so glad that we're here to talk about it. We have done a lot of work on this topic and a vaccine hesitancy, and happy to share my reflections and findings on that.
And you had a pretty big role with regard to the federal response as well. Is that correct? That you played a role there?
Yes, I was on the Biden-Harris transition COVID team. We met during the transition time and prepared a lot of the plan action plans for once Biden took office. And I enjoyed my time on that team. It was a great group of individuals across the country.
And I think that's important. No matter, you know, as a specialty that seems to, at least in ongoing polls, fall on both sides of the aisle pretty evenly, 50-50. You know, so politics aside, it is important that no matter who's in office, that we have emergency physician representation and a voice at the table. Because as much as it's good to have physicians there, I think we all realize how unique the emergency environment is and how few really understand a lot of that emergency environment. And of course, emergency medicine and critical care is integral with how that has played such a huge role throughout the COVID pandemic. So let's talk a little bit about some of these sensitive populations in vaccine hesitancy. Before we started recording, we were talking about the fact that I did a radio show today. And of course, typical populations talking about the traditional, you know, it's made of aborted fetal parts and the fact it's an experimental medication and it's not approved and that sort of thing. But we're not talking about some of those old kind of things that we've been hearing from populations. This is more the impact on some of the on other and special and more high risk populations. So get into this vaccine hesitancy, the background and what we're talking about today.
Colleagues at 15 emergency departments across the country and I did a study in the emergency department of vulnerable populations that go to the ED. We all know as emergency physicians that there's a group of people that whose only healthcare access occurs in emergency departments. And this group is highly vulnerable from a healthcare access standpoint, from the standpoint of COVID. They've been disproportionately affected by COVID, by the COVID pandemic. And this group, other surveys and other studies of vaccine hesitancy, they're usually conducted by online or by telephone calls. And they're going to miss that vulnerable population in the emergency department. A lot of these people don't have telephones or don't have phones or aren't going to answer their phones. They don't have access to online survey type methods. So we conducted this study from December through January of last year, 2020 to 2021, and in 15 EDs. And we basically asked them, we gauged the level of vaccine hesitancy in this group. We asked the reasons why they were vaccine hesitant in those who were vaccine hesitant. And then we asked those who would accept the vaccine, whether they would be willing to accept it in the emergency department. So it was kind of a three-pronged primary outcome study. And what we found was there was a high degree of vaccine hesitancy. The range was anywhere from about 30% to as high as above 50% in respective EDs. Different EDs had different levels of vaccine hesitancy. We sub-stratified the group that we surveyed into those who had primary care versus those who did not have primary care. And we found that those who did not have primary care were significantly more vaccine hesitant. They were about 47% of them were vaccine hesitant as compared to around 40% in those who had primary care. And again, this is the vulnerable population that we care for in the emergency department. There, you know, we are their de facto primary care doctors. And so we identified that group as a group that is particularly vaccine hesitant. And the reasons that they were vaccine hesitant were similar to what has been described in other studies. They were worried about side effects. They thought the vaccine was too new, and they didn't think, a lot of them weren't really worried about COVID to begin with. Then we also looked at that issue about whether people would accept the vaccine through the emergency department. And of those who were not vaccine hesitant, those who would accept a COVID vaccine if offered, 94% of them, the vast majority of them, would accept it through the emergency department. And so that segued into some of our interactions with the CDC and with certain individuals in the Biden administration and American College of Emergency Physicians, where we started programs of pushing for COVID vaccines in the emergency department. And we developed several programs through that. And ACEP has been very forward-looking, very, very powerful in those efforts.
And that's an important thing to bring up, is, you know, because there's a lot of physician hesitancy with regard to what we can and should be doing out of the emergency department. But the reality being that we are, you know, the single access point for a significant number of our population. I mean, we see with the opioid epidemic, we're becoming a landing spot and disposition spot for bridging and induction and that type of thing. We know that significant positive patient-oriented outcomes from that standpoint. And so I think, you know, and we actually saw it this year in council, there was a fair number of resolutions and efforts at improving that aspect of the social determinants of health and what we can do as an emergency physician.
I completely agree. And addressing social determinants of health is critically important at this time. But I want to make it clear and make it absolutely clear that we're not talking about bringing in people de novo, you know, advertising, hey, we're a vaccine site. We're a COVID vaccine site. We're not talking about that. What we're talking about is for patients that are already there, and, you know, patients that are there for a sprained ankle, for, you know, a laceration or something else, for patients that are already there, capturing them at that point. That's a very important distinction because, you know, there's a lot of, as you said, there is some hesitancy from physicians and emergency departments. You know, they don't really want to become a de novo vaccine site, and that's understandable. I actually completely agree with that. But you know, there's just a there. We have I think the latest numbers were over about 140 million or more ED visits to the U.S. annually, and so it might even be more than that. So that's just a huge number of visits. And as we all know, a lot of those visits are, you know, are for very minor things in which you can augment their care by offering them a COVID vaccine.
And we do that with other vaccines as well. I mean, many departments are offering the flu vaccine if somebody's already there. Of course, inpatient, the pneumovax, those types of things as well. So, you know, it's amazing how there are things that we can do, and I completely agree, not necessarily hanging our shingle as the public health access point, but at the same time, you know, when we've got people there interacting with the healthcare system through the emergency department, there's no reason we shouldn't take advantage to improve that time as well. Now, you talked about, and I'm glad you mentioned some of the challenges of electronic-based surveys with the selection bias that may come out of that based on technology, age, socioeconomic status, those types of things. And I think that's really important to reach people where they are to get a better representation of who we have. Give us a little bit of a breakdown, a general breakdown of the demographics of the patients that you are seeing and the patients that were part of this study.
Yeah, so thanks for that. Yeah, it was a very urban population. The 15 sites were all in cities, and they were all either county hospitals or, you know, affiliated with county hospitals. And the demographics were over half of them were either Latino or African-American. And then, the rest of the demographics followed. It was generally a bit of a younger population. I think the median age was approximately 40, and that for me is young, by the way. We stratified according to race and ethnicity, and found that African Americans and Latinos were more vaccine hesitant as compared to their white counterparts, we also found that about 20% of these people did not have any primary care physicians or clinics, and a large portion of them, those who did not have primary care, we asked them what do they do for healthcare, and they said, yeah, they come to the emergency department. So this was a very urban, it's what we see in our EDs, urban population. And I think it's very important to characterize that group. There were a lot of homeless people in the population that we studied as well. And, those people by definition almost are not going to be accessed in other types of surveys and survey instruments.
We had a hard time. I mean, I think every community's tried to find ways to best access those high risk and vulnerable populations in our communities. You know, we had vaccine clinics and such that were set up within the homeless shelters and outreach, and actually even, even ones that were traveling around as part of our community paramedicine to go to the homeless, you know, in their encampments and where they may be to try to get them vaccinated because there was so much transition and translation between people and the communities that may be higher risk.
Kudos on that. I'm a huge admirer of those outreach efforts. One other group that we sampled and that is not represented in other type studies is undocumented immigrants. And I think about somewhere around 5% or somewhere 3 to 5% of the people that we surveyed were undocumented immigrants, mostly Spanish speaking. And we are conducting further studies on that group right now. We are looking at their COVID vaccine access and their hesitancy in a sub-study as well. We also, a group of us got a, I got a grant from NIAID from NIH basically to address vaccine hesitancy through the emergency department. And that's our focus now. And I can tell you a little bit about that if we have time. But what we are doing is we at four sites here in San Francisco, Seattle, Philadelphia, and Durham, North Carolina, we conducted more in-depth interviews. We met with about 80 ED patients whose only healthcare access occurs in emergency departments. We conducted in-depth qualitative interviews, and to get really a better look, a more granular look at why they're vaccine hesitant, what we could do about it. Like, who do they trust? What types of messaging do they trust? And we're setting up for basically a randomized trial of vaccine messaging in the emergency department.
That's it. And that's actually rolling into the two next questions. And I'll just get to the first one right now. But you mentioned the African-American and Latino population. What were some of the big themes? I mean, I know some of it's a new medication, you know, those sorts of things, not completely approved, you know, the kind of the more widespread ones. But were there any specific kind of global themes that you can't necessarily cover with the overall population umbrella that impacted the African-American and Latino population in terms of the hesitancy? Because I think that's all very important to understand that, you know, you can't paint the solution with one brush. We may have to address something that is deep down. You know, and one example for me here is that, you know, I've had a number of African-American folks mention that some of a lot of the hesitancy is from the history of the U.S. healthcare system, especially with regard to the Tuskegee experiments and other things of that nature. Were there themes that you saw among certain populations of people?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in our in-depth looks at that, we got really drilled down into it. And there was a large amount of distrust, of the medical system, of governments. The biggest concern was that it was too new, and a lot of people said that they didn't want to be quote unquote guinea pigs, and that they felt like the vaccine was rushed. Another interesting theme or interesting comment that we heard occasionally was, you've heard of these incentives like the lottery or giving away baseball tickets or you know, giving other prizes to get the vaccine. Some of the respondents to our study found that to be even more concerning. It made them even more vaccine hesitant. They felt like hey, if they're paying me to do this, if they have to pay me to do this, there's got to be something wrong with the vaccine. So there were other sort of minor concerns that we're trying to address. We're trying to get the point out that there are more patients in these vaccines, COVID vaccine studies, than any other vaccine studies in history. There were over, you know, if you add up the total participants in the three major ones in the U.S., it's over 100,000 people. And so we're trying to get the word out that about that. We're also trying to get the word out that that it's not really, you know, we probably know more about COVID vaccines than any other vaccines now, because so many people have had it. We're monitoring them so closely. 225 million people in the U.S. and 4 billion people in the world have received them. So they're not, what we're trying to get across in our messaging is that they're not really new anymore. They're not, we have a ton of experience with these vaccines. So that those are the things that we're trying to focus on.
And as you mentioned, I know you have more of the in-depth study with those four sites talking about some of addressing. What were some of the things in terms of take-home messages for, you know, physicians and other healthcare professionals out there that are listening? What are some of the take-home messages and things that we can do to help bridge that gap and make sure that as many people as qualify can get that vaccine and get that vaccine?
So I'd say the first thing, it's kind of a stepwise thing. First thing is to ask patients, you know, have you had a COVID vaccine? I've made that part of my H&P really on pretty much every patient now. So the first thing you got to do is ask. The second thing is if they haven't received a vaccine, you know, just gently ask them why. It's important to be non-judgmental and to not, you know, certainly not ridicule anybody or make them, you know, feel bad about that. So find out what their concerns are and try and address their concerns. And then finally, I think if you have the COVID vaccine in your ED, then, you know, just go ahead and if you can discuss that with the patient and they can, you know, and potentially change their mind, offer it there. And if you don't have it available in your ED, have sheets prepared or have, you know, little cards prepared where you can tell them where they can get it. Because access is still, believe it or not, for some patients, it's still an issue. They don't, there's a fair number of people that we interviewed, especially undocumented immigrants and homeless persons that did not know where they could get a vaccine.
Do you have any closing thoughts or anything that we didn't necessarily hit here that'll help continue to move us as a profession forward in making sure that we provide the care that we need for those, especially the vulnerable populations that we see in the emergency department?
Yeah, my closing thoughts are directed at booster vaccines. So, you know, now it's pretty clear that in certain populations, certainly the elderly and others, that booster vaccines are indicated. In fact, the CDC has now recommended booster vaccines for anybody 50 years and older. And they said that any adult who's 6 months out should also, they didn't recommend it for 18 to 50, but they said they can get it. I think that we're headed to where they're going to say that everybody over the age of 18 should get a booster. So I think we need to turn our attention to booster vaccines as well. I'm asking my patients whether they've had their booster vaccine and recommending that to them as well. It's clear that the immunity wanes over time, And there, of course, are also, you know, these variants. So booster vaccines are, I think, critically important. And that's where I think we should also not forget.
Yeah, absolutely. That's and actually, it's a little bit easier with the booster because it's going to be a one-shot deal no matter which one you're using. You know, as opposed to getting somebody who's on their initial round, if you're using Pfizer or Moderna, you got the two shot, getting the first one there and then arranging for the second one to get done and making sure that there is follow through, you know, potential for the J&J. But, you know, it's still kind of the not quite the efficacy that we've seen with the mRNA based. How can folks get in touch with you if they have any questions? And of course, I hope we have you back, especially after this second round, the more in-depth study that you're doing now at the four sites. That we can get you back with a summary of what you found and what we can learn from that moving forward, because it may not just be the COVID vaccine, you know, here in a number of years. It may be, you know, information, data that we can translate into other areas of social determinants of health and vulnerable populations, and how do we address a lot of different things, not just necessarily COVID. So how can folks get in touch with you if they have any further questions?
Yeah, thanks for that. I'm always happy to hear from people. My email address is robert.rodriguez with a Z at ucsf.edu. And I always love hearing from people, getting their comments and their, you know, and their concerns. I know that some of these ideas, like perhaps, you know, the COVID vaccinations and emergency department, that not everybody agrees with that. You know, it's important to hear from people. So I'm always happy to hear from people. And it's been a total pleasure to speak with you today, Ryan.
Well, I appreciate it. And what people don't know out there is that we were actually on our two-hour delayed version of the podcast because I've been traveling around enough that I had the time completely messed up in my head. And so I'm getting a text while I'm driving around, actually about 15 minutes after it started, of, are you going to join the meeting? And so that was my Zoom call faux pas of the day. I'm sure I will do more, but I apologize for the delay, but also appreciative of your time, Dr. Rodriguez, and thanks for joining us here on the front line.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you, Ryan.
So Dr. Rob Rodriguez chatting with us about the vaccine hesitancy among vulnerable populations, an important topic for us all as we continue to trudge through the COVID-19 pandemic. And, you know, as the numbers are dropping, we are kind of seeing a little bit of an uptick in. You know, so I definitely don't think this is going to disappear from our radar anytime soon. And so we continue to move to the next phase as we do with this pandemic. It's, you know, every few months we shift and attack the next battlefront. So a lot of opportunities for us out there. Hope everybody out there has gotten their booster. I got mine this last week, and so did my wife, and got my 12-year-old her first dose a few days ago. And so we really appreciate everybody's time and everybody's efforts in continuing to fight this pandemic. But we also need to make sure that we are focusing on those vulnerable populations out there as well. As for me, you can contact me at rstanton@asep.org, rstanton@asep.org, or at EverydayMed on Twitter. I encourage you, please, to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you like. It's on most of them. Listen every week. We continue to try to bring you fantastic information and guests such as Dr. Rodriguez with information to help make our practices and profession better off. Until next time, I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton, and this has been some ASAP Frontline.